into the Mountain West Connection podcast here. Jeremy Moss hanging out with Chris Hondris as we recap the four games. MWCConnection.com, like I said, Facebook, Mountain West Connection, MWC Connection on Twitter, all that good stuff. We only have four games, but we got a lot to talk about.
We have tons to talk about despite there only being four games.
So where should we begin? Should we begin with the game? Should we begin with the big news Sunday night? Should we go off topic?
Well, we don't have enough time to go off topic.
Good point. But, well, if we want to do playoff off topic.
Yeah. Let's start with the Twitter questions, because we've only gotten
a couple.
We've gotten a couple Twitter questions, and I think they're very valid questions because it goes into our first talking about.
Yeah, let's get into the most. I think this is the most legitimate question we have from Sean Walker here, D. Sean KSL. Chris, can you confirm or deny you're on the short list of USC's head coach?
Not USC's head coaching list, but I cannot confirm or deny either about Hawaii's head coaching list either.
Ooh, we'll get to that later. That's intriguing. So this is not I specified on Twitter. This is not for the tennis coach, right? Tennis opening.
No, this is not for the tennis coach. This would be for the football coaching position.
Just making sure there, because you do coach junior varsity girls tennis. So,
yeah, you know that I will tell you that the attitudes in coaching JV girls tennis are much more difficult than to deal with a whole bunch of about 53 college age men trying with high emotions trying to play football. JV girls is actually more difficult.
Yeah, 15-year-old girls. Yeah, that's exciting. Eesh, they can be crazy. All right. So that question's out of the way. Let's go to here's an NFL.
I was going more with the Duke Miami. Did you watch that?
I saw the preview. I saw it afterwards. What the? I haven't seen the fall. Apparently, I know the ACC apparently screwed up allegedly, but that was one heck of a final play. To me, when I saw it, it looked clean.
Mm-mm.
No?
No. Granted,
I saw it once or twice. I didn't go slow motion. I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Outside of the fact the hit might have been clean, but the knee on the ground when lateraling, that was definitely down.
I haven't watched it since. I saw it last night. It looked pretty good. I haven't seen it today since we've heard. Here's why. They said, so which knee was it? I can pull it up right now. Watch it. Was this one of the early laterals?
Yes.
Where the knee was down? And then what was up with the touchdown? They're saying, like, because I went to thestateofyou.com on part of all sorts of other sites, kind of looking at it last night. What was the deal with the Duke touchdown? Like, he didn't cross the end zone or something as well? So they're kind of complaining about that.
I didn't hear anything about that, but I just remember the two things that I saw that were completely that should have ended the game.
Well, here's the thing. It sucks. They spent 10 minutes reviewing the play, which. But also, I've been reading up, when I saw the question, I've been reading up a few things. I haven't got a chance to watch the video, but they said they spent over 10 minutes reviewing it, but the booth never looked at it. That doesn't make sense.
Well, because it wouldn't be the booth that looked at it. It would be the booth back in New York that looks at it.
No, that's for baseball. They look at everything in-house. I'm talking about upstairs.
Like, yeah, So if there was like an illegal like or an instant replay or something like that, that actually goes to New York.
I didn't realize they did that college football. I thought that's MLB only.
No.
Well, here's the funniest thing about it. Okay, it hurts Miami probably going to a bowl game now. But some people are saying, oh, the loss would hurt to get a second New Year's bowl game. It's like, really, ACC? You're getting two of those?
No, nope, you're not.
No, I'm like, it stinks. They got rid of the officials for two games. It was a crazy play. I thought one of the passes went forward, but it looked like it was actually one of the cross-field passes, which is pretty crazy.
But the ACC will probably get two teams, but it'll be Clemson, Florida State, Duke will be in the mix.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, whatever. This actually helps the ACC a bit because we'll get a few extra $100,000 for bowl money if Miami gets in.
Exactly.
It was a crazy play. I need to look at it again for the kneel down because I heard a little bit about it, but I didn't really have time to go back and see where the kneel down. You said it's one of the early laterals. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. sure, whatever. I'll look at it later, but it happens and it shouldn't happen. Well, here's the thing. It shouldn't happen with replay. You know what I mean? This should not be the case. It sounds like there are multiple blown calls that could have been reviewed. The pass interference calls I read about, yeah, you can't do anything about that, but if there's no, like the Duke touchdown, that doesn't happen. There's the quarterback sneak. They didn't review enough. And then this is what I hate too. I read an article on the State of the U or the SB Nation Miami site, a big old post about how, yes, everybody hates Miami no matter what. The evidence is clear. It's like, get over yourselves. Come on, whatever. It's true people don't like Miami, but these refs are paid to make the call. Yeah, they screwed up. Shouldn't happen, but still. And they're all going off on Robert Smith, Mike Wilbon and stuff. It's like, come on. Whatever. The band was on the field. The Stanford Cowboy was never legal either, so come on.
Yes. So in the meantime, we have one more. So we'll get to our we'll get to one of our big news in a second. But secondly, Kent Myers just tweeted out Utah State now has chrome face masks. I figured that's an important amount.
Where's that? I need to follow Kent. Well, I know Kent Myers follows us, but
up his Twitter, it looked like a Snapchat.
K. Myers balling, right?
His mask, and he says, "Isn't it beautiful?"
Retweet awesome, that, okay? Retweet awesome. That, okay?
I will retweet that from the. I shall retweet that from both.
Sure, whatever. Go for it. So, also, there's other news that was before the podcast. It's kind of NFL news. My team is the Dallas Cowboys, and they're terrible, losing 13-12 today. Why not give Kellen Moore a chance, right? He can't be worse than Matt Castle.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Matt Castle had 97 yards passing. Ugh, terrible. Let's get to some games now. We'll get to that stuff later. That was kind of a mean chase.
You want to talk about Norm Chow or you want to talk about...
Let's get to Norm Chow real quick. Yeah. Norm Chow, done. The official term from the AD is that he was relieved of his duties. Sorry, Normie. Grandpa Norm, you're fired.
Grandpa Norm is fired. That makes me very, very sad.
Oh, those are nice helmets, man. Whew. That's a nice face mask there. That's going to go on the website in a few minutes here. That's very nice. Thank you, Kent Myers. So back to Norm, Grandpa Norm. Did you notice I posted that just now after all this news broke out yesterday because I was seeing what the Hawaii World or Star advertiser was saying about it. We'll talk about their game here as well just because we're going to stick with Hawaii, but the headline of the article was Norm Chow's not worried about his job after Air Force loss. Whoops. Should have been.
Well, yeah, because you figure he was probably going to retire at the end of the season anyway. But.
So that was, I posted that. That was kind of funny. But I don't think anybody's too surprised that he's got, like, I'm surprised a little bit that they're not letting him finish out the three games.
Yeah, I'd be thinking that too. But in the meantime, whoops, I got to take this call.
Okay, take the call. I'll talk about Grandpa Norm here, okay?
Okay.
All right, so Norm Chow, here's kind of the news on it. It happened earlier today on Sunday afternoon. He's only won 10 games in his career at Hawaii. Not very good. And Hawaii, here's the thing. In 2010, they won 10 games. So this has gone downhill bad. They've been to a BCS bowl game. Yeah, you could say about their schedule back in that year in what was it, 06 or 07 and Colt Brennan's year there when they lost to Georgia. This is a program with June Jones and coaches before him, even back in the WAC in the 80s, they were scoring 40 points, 50 points a game, contending with when BYU was the king of the WAC years ago. Colorado State was very good. They were always scoring points and being a pain in people's side. There's talent in Hawaii, which is unfortunate. They can't keep guys to stay home, but Norm Chow is unfortunately way past his prime. You kind of saw, if you go back to it, when he was at Utah, he wasn't doing that great as their offensive coordinator. When he's at UCLA, they kind of pigeonholed him a little bit when Rick Neuheisel was there, like, hey, run the pistol, Norm, run this. But
yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I'm back.
I heard that. I heard a little breeze. I'm like, hey, it must be Chris. I heard something pop open.
So, and here's the thing, and with Hawaii, you need innovation. That's what June Jones did so well at Hawaii. He brought his air raid offense to the islands. Norm Chow, as much of an offensive guru as he was, he hadn't been innovative over the past few years.
Not since USC. Like,
it'd be like Chris Alt saying, oh, the pistol's, you know, fantastic as it is. We are not going to have to do anything to it. No, as a coach, as an educator, no matter what you're doing, you need to be improving on your methods no matter what. And, you know, as a result, you can't just let it go.
Yeah, he like I could like hear me say the UCLA thing. It wasn't really his fault because what Neuheisel wanted him to do. But again, his offense hadn't been really good in years. Like I said, he was at the University of Utah, nothing special there. There's people I trust and believe saying he was done at 6 o'clock. Whenever it's 6 o'clock, he was done coaching, done doing film, done doing a game plan. He was done by dinner time. And you can't be a successful big time offensive coordinator or even head coach if you're done at 6 o'clock at night.
I just tweeted out Will Muschamp for Hawaii.
Ooh, okay, there you go. Here's the thing about the job. Okay, and we'll kind of go order, break it down a little bit here. The interim head coach was an interesting choice. It's Chris Naley. He was the associate head coach, or assistant, I think assistant head coach, an official term, offensive line coach. Our guy Chris Turner did a quick write-up on, hey, who the heck is this guy? It's not Don Bailey, which is kind of a shock, their OC coming from Idaho State. This is a guy, he grew up in Hawaii. He won multiple state titles. He went to Colorado, All-American, played in the NFL for a very long time, first-round pick. He's been back, I believe, is this his first year with the program? Because it's not Tom Mason, the DC. So this is interim. This is obviously very interim. I'll give him a 1% chance to get this job.
But at the same time, I'm going to go ahead and say this right here. At the same time, perhaps he goes, you know, let's see here. Perhaps he goes, what am I looking at? Perhaps he goes 2-2, or he could possibly go 4-0 to finish out the season.
Who's on their schedule? I don't have it in front of me.
UNLV, Fresno State, San Jose State, Louisiana Monroe.
That's conceivable. I could see that. Because
3 of those games are at home.
Who's the road game?
UNLV.
And that's a rivalry game of somehow from years ago. The only game I would say I would probably lean to them not winning would be the San Jose State game. I'd probably go with the Spartans almost for sure to win that game.
If he goes 4-0, remove the interim tag right there. And don't pay him as much. Pay him like whatever. What is he making as an assistant right now? 150? Pay him $200,000, $50,000 upgrade. That saves on the price. And guess what? That means if he starts being successful at Hawaii over the next few years, then you get to build him that upgrade. Then you get to give him more money. But in the meantime, Hawaii is always concerned about money in terms of dropping the program, not getting the attendance, everything like that. You don't need to pay a coach $1.5 million. I mean, if you want to stay competitive with the rest of the conference, yes, you do. But if you're going to be hiring a brand spanking new coach and removing that interim tag, no, you start him low.
They need to pay him at least $400,000, I think, if it's him or any head coach.
Why are you just talking about because living expenses, or what are you talking about?
You don't want to drag, because here's the thing. There's two. Like, I definitely get your point don't pay a new guy that much money. But then again, what are you paying your assistant coaches? You're going to get, no offense, but pretty crappy assistant coaches if you're paying them $100,000 for an OC.
Well, you can't live off $100,000 in an OC. Maybe, okay, fine, $300,000, $200,000. I don't care. You don't need to be paying a coach $1.5 million, especially if he's a brand new guy. Unless it's Will Muschamp. Yeah, that's just I tweeted that out.
We're starting here. Will Muschamp for Hawaii. Or is it Rod? Who's the other guy? Rod Prince for Hawaii? Do we need to Ron start
Prince
that up?
For Hawaii.
Start that up too, Chris.
I'll tweet that out too. I'm going to tweet that out right now. Hold on.
Tack Spencer real quick. He'll like that too, right?
Yeah.
What do they need in Hawaii? Because we've heard about the Colt Brennan, so they got crap facilities. There's no soap in the locker room. Parking, they got to pay to park during practice. This would be a good guy to be their head coach because he's from Hawaii. Very successful college career, All-American, 3-time Big 12 All-First Team. and a decade in NFL just about. He just, his coaching is very limited. And so I would like, honestly, why not have Don Bailey be the head coach eventually? Look what he did. Yeah,
and you know what? Don Bailey would be ready as well.
He was the OC at Idaho State. He's there. Obviously, he's there. You know, he's at the program now. But he, if you want the innovative offense, here's what Norm Chow is making. He, just for a reference, he's making $550,000 base salary. Well, from the school, he's making about just over $600,000 for total. $550,000 from the school and about $75,000 from outside money.
That's what Chris Naomi's making right now?
No. Norm Chow.
Then start him there.
Start him at $500,000. A little bit less than
start him at $500,000.
Yeah.
That's really high, but I mean, that's a pretty low starting point compared to other programs.
Charlotte is paying their head coach $600,000. So there you go.
Whatchamacallit? Sanchez is base 300.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Brian Poland, 575. And Ron Carragher's been there a couple years, 540. So yeah, I like Sanchez. That makes sense. High school coach, don't pay him, don't overpay him. Because look what he was able to bring in. Look at the assistants from Nebraska, former Colorado DC. Look at the guys he can bring in. Don't overpay so he can have good assistant coaching on the team. But I think the main thing, and everybody's pointing this out, bring back June Jones. You're not getting June Jones back to this program. Sorry.
No, he's not even coaching right now.
He quit. So. He said he's retired. He quit SMU. I say it, he quit. And if they go 4-0, consider this guy. But I got to look at some names, but I'm not really sure who would be considered. You got Don Bailey. There's some guys like take somebody from the Wazoo staff, maybe somebody from Texas Tech. That would make sense.
You know what? We can talk about this later. We still have four games.
There's a lot. Yeah, it's still early too. We gotta look to see who's around, but
and then the rankings.
Yeah, we'll get to all that, but just keep an eye on it. We already have like a ton of coverage on the site. If you want to know about the new head coach or interim head coach, check that out. Chris Turner did a good job for us. Our good Keith will put up some other articles about it today. We'll have a bunch of stuff going forward, so keep abreast to that, and we'll let you know of. And I put one last quick thing on this. I put a quick ranking of the 10 openings because here's one last thing before we talk a ton about it. There are so many openings now. Hawaii is going to be tough to get a good coach because you have USC, Miami, South Carolina. You have Central Florida. You have, however many others, 10 coaches available right now. Illinois, Minnesota. I rank them ninth, or I think I put them ninth out of North Texas. Does that sound about right? Or would you put them above? I debated, honestly, putting them above Illinois.
No, that I would put them above Illinois.
I should look what I put, but I'm just thinking how terrible that school is at football, and they don't care. They're basketball. There's the issues going on this past year with Tim Beckman. That's who it was, not Tim Brewster, Tim Beckman. But yeah, there's so many like South Carolina, Virginia Tech, Frank Beamer today, Maryland, UCF. I put Hawaii ninth above, and then people are in the comments were giving me crap for saying North Texas should be higher than Hawaii. I'm like, no, not a chance.
Yeah,
they're probably the last school in FBS in Texas to get talent. Essentially, they get the leftover. They get the Texas Tech leftovers. All right, so let's just stick to this Hawaii game real quick. I watched a little bit. I'm like, I'm done with this. They got smoked by Air Force, which is obviously the reason Norm Chow is gone. Their defense they had at all beginning of the year is not there. Max Wittig is clearly not the answer at all, and they got steamrolled by Air Force, and that's pretty much it, right?
Yeah, what else do you talk about this game? Jacoby Owens, 30 carries, 137 yards, fantastic.
It's what we wanted from a running back.
Finally what we wanted from Jacoby Owens. Carson Roberts didn't do too well at quarterback, but he didn't have to either. And then everybody kind of spread 83 carries. Good Lord.
Wow, more than last week. Wow, 83 carries.
Weston Steelhammer with a pick. Roland Lapido with a pick. They had 2 yards. Hawaii had -2 yards rushing.
Let me ask you this real quick. Air Force to win the Mountain Division? Is that looking more and more of a possibility?
Absolutely. It's more, it's not, everything's always more of a possibility.
They still have to play Boise and USU, but man, we'll talk about, it's interesting. Let's go back chronological order. We'll skip back, cause that was the final game. Let's go to the Friday night game for the battle for Jim Bridger's rifle, which goes to Utah State.
Battle for Bridger, the battle for Bridger's rifle. Excellent. Wyoming was approximately in this game for a quarter and a half.
Utah's defense I'm not liking it very much.
No, they are not what they were last year. And if that's because of the loss of Ali, I forget his name for a second, defensive end.
B.J. Larson.
Well, B.J. Larson's gone, but
The other Vigil brother?
No, not the other Vigil brother. There was a guy who was injured 2 weeks ago during the Boise game.
Oh, I'm spacing. I don't recall. I apologize, people.
Well, anyway, so just without him up front with your veteran leadership, there's too many holes for Utah State to basically plug through. And yes, I mean, Utah State has faced the two top rushers in the conference over the last 2 weeks. And if McNichols was there, who knows what would have happened to the Boise State game. But you face Donnell Pumphrey, who tore him apart, and then you face Brian Hill, who definitely tore him apart, 26 carries for 201 yards. Whew. But things that we're seeing from this game, Kent Myers, 14 for 17. He didn't have an incompletion until the third quarter.
He played very well, 246 out of that range of 14 to 17. He played well. This was, like you were saying, the defense. The first half defense did not impress me one bit.
Yeah. Even Nick Smith did pretty well for Wyoming, subbing in for Cameron Coffin. Nick Smith was 10 for 18, 83 yards, which isn't a lot, but he got two touchdowns, zero interceptions, basically avoided mistakes.
Yeah, but watching him in the first half.
Carries for 53 yards and touchdown there.
He did well, like in the first half. I'm like, man, he's looking good. I this game was late. I was tired. I dozed off when it was like, I think I fell asleep when Utah State hit 40 points or something like that. I was kind of off and on. But I was looking, like, I'm commenting or tweeting out, like, yeah, Nick Smith, man, he's looking pretty good in the first half. Not overall, like you said, no mistakes. Utah State secondary is really good, but running for that many yards, he's going to be technically the third string quarterback. I don't know how serious Cameron Coffman's injury is, if he's going to miss multiple games, but why not? You're 1-8. Go with Nick Smith if he's even close to Coffman and get ready for next year. They were also missing Tanner Gentry, which was a big deal. But Jake Malthart had two touchdowns on four receptions. And Utah State pulled away. They did fine. But like their defense, like Brian Hill's very good. But it just looked, the first couple of drives were is more back and forth than I expected.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And on Wyoming, it's exactly what we were saying about Wyoming's defense all year. Wyoming's defense, this is the weakness of the Wyoming team. It's not the offense this year, surprisingly. It's the defense. You can't give up 296 yards passing, 296 yards rushing. Utah State's not a rushing team. Sorry. Oh, hate to say it.
They might be now. They might be now.
They might be now. Okay, Devontae Mays.
Took him long enough to find a guy.
Juan Hunt certainly hasn't been effective this year.
Nope.
Devontae Mays has basically come out as the top leading rusher. It's been fantastic. Kent Myers does what he needs to do. Which is what a quarterback should do unless you're running a triple option.
He's a bit up and down, but he found a bit more in this game.
But you cannot give up 296 yards of rushing. Sorry, no can do.
Yeah, I don't know, because Utah State, they're still in the driver's seat to win the Mountain Division. So until they lose, they're ready to go. And they're.
Yeah, exactly. Until they lose. And the question is, are they going to lose?
They play Air Force.
Yeah, they play Air Force, they play Nevada, they play BYU.
And BYU and New Mexico.
And New Mexico.
Yeah, and New Mexico. And the BYU game doesn't count towards this, so.
But if they gave up, you know, almost 250 yards rushing to Wyoming today, or our last game, and then they gave up however many rushing yards to San Diego State the previous week, how much are they going to give up to New Mexico this week?
Yeah, Lobos.
That's a legitimate, serious question.
Hey, ask 2014 Boise State defense. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway,
I'm slightly concerned. I'm concerned that, well, I should be more than slightly, but there needs some work to be done on that rush defense. So, but their offense, hey, they got Hayes back there running the ball. Myers, if he could be somewhere near that when he's playing these better teams, that's very good. All right, next game, we had day football on Saturday. How great was that? Afternoon football.
Afternoon football. I was at a bar in the afternoon. That was fantastic.
You found a Boise State bar. I was at a bar
on the beach in the afternoon.
Was it a Boise State bar, you said?
It was a Boise State bar.
How many Broncos fans were in attendance?
And in fact, I told the general manager that I would give a shout out. So shout out to Sandbar in Mission Beach, San Diego, which is right next to Belmont Park. Fantastic service, awesome venue, and we were on the second floor of the bar and literally 500 feet away from the beach.
Awesome. To hear the crashing of the waves with a touchdown. So that's pretty cool to find a place out there. So was it decently attended for Boise State fans?
You know, apparently from what the Alumni Association people were telling me, it was low crowd. I mean, there were only 15 of us there.
Okay.
But they said a lot of people went out to Vegas this weekend.
Which, yeah, if you think about that,
is understandable.
Yeah, if you're in San Diego.
I actually had tickets this game.
Oh.
I mean, I had season tickets to UNLV anyway this year, but I actually had tickets to this game and basically I finally gave it up because I couldn't just get the time to come out and just for the whole weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the earlier kick, if you left Saturday morning, you have to leave really early to get out there with the 12:30 local kickoff there. And this game, this was an exciting game. I had seen.
You there? Looks like Jeremy cut off. But he said for a while. I don't know what he said for a while, but it was actually funny enough. It was Jeremy who actually pointed this out to me when we did the preview podcast that this is almost exactly how I was going to predict this game. First three quarters, UNLV and Tony Sanchez. Man, you want to see how much the UNLV has improved? It's not the two wins this year, which is bad. It's the fact they were playing. What?
I think you lost me there for a second. Go ahead.
You got cut out. You got cut out like very quickly.
Oh, I think I pulled up my Ethernet. I was just saying, should it be me that complains about the final score, or you about fans complaining about the final score?
Neither.
Okay. Well,
once again, I'm going to go ahead and give myself an ego pat here because it was you who pointed out that I would predict this game almost correctly.
Three or three quarters, you were there.
Yeah. So it's what Sanchez has done. And you know, credit to Ed Graney and Mark Anderson from the LVRJ, where they basically wrote an article. I forgot which one wrote the article on. This game was going to be used as a measuring stick. Well, guess what? This game was used as a measuring stick. And they measured up pretty well until the last quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, that's supposed to make sense.
Yeah, 55-27. If you just skim the box score, it's like, oh, blowout, typical UNLV. Yeah, the score is the final score. And Boise had a tremendous fourth quarter, 28 points, and turned it on. Because what, Brett Rypien actually broke Kellen Moore's freshman record for most yards in a game. Was that correct?
Yes. Yes, he did.
Not a school record, but a freshman record.
And how upset are you? Darian Thompson broke Eric Weddle's record of most career interceptions.
People tried to make that a big deal to me. Whatever. Eric Weddle is and will be, until somebody does better than what he did, my all-time favorite University of Utah athlete, just because of senior year, there's no quarterback. Hey, Eric Weddle, play quarterback. Hey, play wide receiver. Hey, play kick return. Hey, get an interception. Loved it. So, whatever.
He is my favorite San Diego Charger.
And yeah, and he's deservedly of that contract that Warren Sapp still says he isn't. So, and just to be fair, this is going to be so nitpicky, and I'm going to bring it up just because I was at the Fort Worth Bowl. He deliberately knocked down an interception that could have been, that was basically a punt, to knock it down to not inflate his numbers. So it could be one more interception needed.
Yeah, well, but then again, Darian Thompson's probably going to get that.
Yeah, of course. No, I'm just saying, yeah. No, I don't care. It's great record. He's my favorite guy from Utah, and congrats for Thompson. That's great. He's a very good defender. So It happens. But this game, man, that UNLV secondary, come on. You got to stop something.
Can I say what a difference Blake Decker makes as a quarterback? Am I allowed to say that now?
Yeah, go for it. He played pretty well.
29 for 50, 357 yards, no touchdowns, two picks. I mean, those are the bad numbers, but oh my goodness. It's Decker being on the field, he showed his senior leadership that Palandek wasn't. Which makes me think now, what if Decker had played the last two games? Would UNLV not just seal that win? They were winning with Palandek. Palandek wasn't making mistakes. Mm-hmm. But imagine throwing. What?
Not quite their throwing as well as Decker. Decker improved in this game quite a bit.
Exactly. Exactly. And he ran when he needed to. Three rushes for 16 yards. I think he only got sacked once or twice against a very strong Boise State defensive line. But you're talking about a team. You're talking about a player, right? Who, I hate to say the what if game, but if he had been playing the last 2 weeks, I don't think we would have seen those last minute losses.
It's quite possible.
It's quite possible, and we'd be talking about very different. We'd be talking about a 4-4 UNLV team, as opposed to a 2-6 UNLV team, which is really weird to say.
That would be weird to say. The only thing in this game that kind of hurt him, Decker is not able to win the game himself. He had little to no help from Kevin Whitley, Xavier Campbell, Lexington Thomas. They had literally no running game.
But at the same time, you're trying to run against Boise State's defense.
But
that's been the strength of Boise State for, I'd say, the last 3 years.
Regardless, still, but if you're going to beat them, you have to have some sort of running game. That's all I'm saying. They're not there yet to move the ball well enough. Because there's teams that might rush for 150 yards on 20 carries, which is average, is pretty good. UNLV only averaged 4 yards a carry. If they would have had 50 more yards, that would have been okay. That's pretty good. But nobody, like, if you look at the long runs, Whitley had 29 total yards, 18 was his long run. So, and then with Campbell, 1 for 11, and then had 29 yards. I get your point, but if they're going to win, you got to have some success moving the ball. And the drive just stalled out. Boise stepped up. And there's also a killer touchdown. Who was the I forget the guy. Was a freshman tight end who missed the touchdown right across the middle?
Yeah.
I think that's when they settled for the third quarter field goal there. And UNLV did a good job of not staying folding, but they made their own stops. Like, they forced a field goal. Had they got the touchdown, that could have been a little difference in the game, but it was just UNLV. Here's the thing. Boise has depth. UNLV does not. And Boise State goes, why are we screwing around with this team? Let's get to it and win this game in the fourth quarter. And they still have the better talent, and that's pretty much how it happened. But UNLV, as I said during the broadcast, Sanchez doesn't have a 5-year plan. He has a 2 or 3 year plan max.
Well, and you have to with this team. You have to get results and get results quickly. But here's the other thing I'm going to say. You say, oh, you have to rush against – look, Washington rushed for 29 yards. BYU rushed for 72. Idaho State rushed for 36. Virginia rushed for 40. Hawaii for 82. Colorado State for 105.
Okay, I gotcha.
And they did much better yesterday against San Diego State. Utah State has rushed for the highest number of yards against Boise State, and that was 177, and that was pretty much mostly Kent Myers.
Okay.
But since then, 110 from Wyoming, and then 110 from Wyoming.
Yeah, Brian Hill.
Which is Brian Hill. If you're limiting Brian Hill and company to 110 yards, and then UNLV. UNLV actually gave up the most touchdowns since Utah State.
Okay, now I got you. That I know that's good examples there. That's fine. I'm terrible at what I'm talking about here. No, I get your point. Their rush defense is good, so it's probably better. It's just then what is it? Their defense, I guess. Look what Brett Rypien did. So it's like it's a tough loss. They were in it, and then they let it slip away a victory, but let it get out of hand. So good for Boise State. Good enough for UNLV. 75% effort.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And here's the thing. We have another Twitter question while we're gone. We had a Twitter question of, what do you think of Air Force's chances versus Utah State and Boise State? We mentioned it already.
Pretty good.
I would say they're pretty good. Yeah. I'd say, especially with Utah State's rush defense right now, chances are actually a little better against Utah State than they are against Boise State.
Very possible, yes.
Very possible. But, of course, you know what? We don't know anything about this conference either.
No, people say we're terrible, so yeah. People are getting ready for my hot takes on Maxwell Smith coming up.
Oh, are you going to do the Maxwell Smith hot takes? You are, aren't you?
Well, no. Let's get to the next game. San Diego State 41, Colorado State 17. I will stand by my facts. Okay, saying he's a terrible quarterback. Okay, he's not terrible anymore. I will admit to that because he's improved every game the past four games. Aztecs are rolling at 6-3, 5-0 conference. Here's what I will say, that I don't care what you tell me. He's not a quarterback that will win you a game.
No, absolutely not.
He was 11-14 for 180 and a touchdown. He, at least when I saw the game, I'd have to look at his complete numbers, 2-for-2 beyond 20 yards, which for him is good. But he's not a guy that will go 26-for-30 or even 20-for-30 to win you a game. He's not that quarterback. Think of
if he has to go for 20 pass attempts, you're San Diego State's in trouble.
That's what I said. Like, if 20 is his max, and I don't think he's had. I need to pull it up here, but I think ever since their turnaround, yes, they got offensive linemen back. They got another linebacker back. That helps quite a bit overall. But once they started realizing, hey, let's limit his throwing to be similar to who is the guy for Baltimore? Is it one of the Hasselback guys? What a Super
Joe
Bowl.
Joe Flacco.
No, not Flacco, before him. No, Joe Flacco's elite. Come on. I'm talking about the guy prior
to him. So is Maxwell Smith.
No, but I'm just saying, but I think that's a fair assessment. He is improving. I can't say he's terrible. 11-14 is not terrible. He's just not.
Well, he's now over the 50% mark.
Oh, if good. How? What game are we? Game 9. He cracked 50%. Congratulations.
Look. All right. Look. So
thank you.
Shit. God, okay. Hold on. Damn it. You're gonna make me laugh too hard. Look. This is his game log right now. Damn it. Okay. See, you're making me go into rage.
Yeah. Thank you. I got him.
Again. Against San Diego, he was 9-for-21. Cool. Against California, he was 10-for-19. South Alabama, 12-for-26. Cool. Penn State, 10-for-30. Okay, Fresno State begins his turnaround. He was 5-for-12.
There you go. Then yeah. Hawaii. Wait, 5-for-12 is what, 65%?
No, that's 42%.
Oh, wait, sorry, 5-for-12. I'm sorry, I was thinking 5-for-8.
Hawaii, 11-for-15. San Jose State, 10-for-14. Utah State 6-for-10, Colorado State 11-for-14. Ladies and gentlemen,
look at the trend. Come on,
you can't even get him past 15 attempts. Forget 20. His max is 15 to be an effective quarterback.
Hey, it's worked for him, so good for them. They found out the routine,
you know, exactly. And you know what? That's what the San Diego State team is meant to do. That's where they've seen their really. That's where they have seen this offensive surge. Is basically, oh, hey, Pumphrey's going to do his thing. Yeah, 20 to 30 carries every single game. Chase Price is going to do another 10 to 15 carries. And then Maxwell Smith is going to throw once every 5 or 6 times.
But apparently,
you know what's funny is like David Furker from San Diego Sports Domination is probably like getting really pissed off listening to this podcast. But it's theory. This is what San Diego State's team is meant to do. Their offense is composed purely of interceptions and Donnell Pumphrey.
Wait, you mean offensive interceptions?
No, defensive interceptions.
Oh, you said their offense is predicated on interceptions and rushing.
Yeah. How many times has the defense scored for San Diego State this year?
I see what you mean there. No, it's right. This game, yes, there's a crappy call against Colorado State that should have been a touchdown. But had the game been closer, I get that. But you probably didn't see it because you're Boise game at the same time.
Actually, they had the game on at the same time.
Okay, did you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, where I live.
from the 1 yard line or something. Yeah. Oh yeah, San Diego. Duh, they have it on. So, but that whatever that sucked, didn't happen. But they had 3 turnovers at the half. Well, they have 4 for the game, and you can't give San Diego State that many turnovers with Pumphrey not just running the clock out for not giving you the ball back, but moving the ball. And then he had Rashad Penny with a big game running the ball, and Dakota Gordon with that big 46-yarder.
Wide sweep motions. And basically those short kind of receiver screen motions. Rashad Penny, 9 carries for 54 yards. I mean, that's just insane.
Yeah, and then even Pumphrey had a receiving touchdown, so he had 3 total scores. He broke off a big run late to basically clinch the game, I think, in the third quarter. But at half, this game was really close, 13-10 for San Diego State. There was a nice field goal that bounced off the upright at the end of the half, which is pretty good. But
yeah, that was all San Diego State luck right there.
Nick Stevens, 17-26, but the 3 interceptions. This was just the Aztecs taking advantage of the Rams' mistakes, and they blew them out, and that's the team they are, and they are. Do you have them as the number one team yet this week, or would you still stick with Boise, as you said last week?
I didn't. No.
Hey, did you said Boise last week.
Oh, yeah. Yes, you're right. I don't know. I'd have to think about it. I just – anytime you allow San Diego State to have 276 rushing yards, you're not going to win games.
Nope.
This team is meant to defeat you on the ground and not the Air Force triple option defeat you. Like, literally the Big Ten style just pummel you to the ground. Yeah. Just machines slowly eating away at your insides while you get torn down. And what's funny is, you want to know what the best part about this is? So Donnell Pumphrey, 20 carries, 121 yards. You know what his long was?
63.
So, yeah, 64-yard touchdown.
64.
So basically, Colorado State had been shutting him down. They just didn't shut anybody else down.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Rashad Penny. Like, who's this Penny character? What's he doing running the ball for 50 yards?
It reminds me of. Did you watch Stanford Washington State last night?
No, I did not.
Basically, how Stanford came back and eventually won this game was, they held. Washington State held Christian McCaffrey to 22 carries, 107 yards, one of those rushes being 30 yards. So basically, I kept his average to about 3 yards or less. But basically, Kevin Hogan took it on himself to basically take 14 carries for 112 yards and just tore Washington State apart, that they were so focused on Christian McCaffrey, they completely forgot about Kevin Hogan. I think that's what happened in this Colorado State game. And then Nick Stevens kind of just misfiring, San Diego State pressuring tipped passes and just pulling off those interceptions. I mean, that's what really killed Colorado State as well.
Yeah, they turn the ball over too many times against a good team.
So I think
it's tough.
I want to say, and I might be wrong here, I want to say with that win, San Diego State has clinched the West Division.
They're 5-0, right?
No, they haven't. They haven't clinched the West Division.
What, San Jose State still can?
They have. You know what? No, they have 3 games left. They have 3 games left versus Wyoming, at UNLV, versus Nevada, but they hold the tiebreak wins over Fresno State and San Jose State. You know what? I think next week we'll officially confirm it. Assuming they beat Wyoming, which they should.
Well, does it? I don't. I'm trying to pull the standings up, but San Jose State have 2 conference losses?
Who?
San Jose State have 2 league losses.
Yes, one's to San Diego State.
Okay, so it's not clinched yet, because if the Aztecs lose the rest of their games and San Jose State wins out, they can win the West with 2 losses.
That's what I'm saying. So basically, they virtually.
Yeah.
They've virtually won the West.
It's going to be tough to lose that.
Yeah, they virtually have won the West. I think if they had lost versus Colorado State, we would have seen more of a chance. But I think they virtually have won the West now.
Yeah, because they're not losing to all those teams left. So, all right, so that's our games we have. Did we want to discuss our other pre-show topic that got heated or not?
Is that the one that's going to make me angry?
Ole Miss? Memphis?
Yes, yes. Why I think an AAC team could make the playoff.
Is this fan fiction?
No, this isn't fan fiction. This is absolutely real. God damn it. We'll have to see how the playoffs are coming out. We'll have to see how the playoff rankings are coming out on Tuesday.
Tuesday.
But I'm totally telling you. Memphis and Houston both have a very, very legitimate chance of making the playoff this year.
0% chance.
You're
and wrong. It's not because I hate the American Conference. It's because I don't trust the system to put a good team not inside the big boy club to get a chance.
I don't either. But see, here's the thing. You can't deny what Memphis has just completely done. Yes, I know you say Houston over Memphis easily, but I say, you know, the win over Ole Miss is better than the win over Vanderbilt. Just Houston and Memphis have just both basically demolishing their competition.
Yeah, but
what you're supposed to say.
There's not much they can do. You play who's in front of you. I get it. Non-conference, you have some wiggle room. But if you're going to compare, say, Florida State to Memphis, they're going to take Florida State if there's any indication. Clemson, Houston, they're going to take Clemson. If you're going to take, heck, even the loser, Baylor, TCU, they play late. The loser, let's take TCU schedule versus Memphis or versus Houston.
But see, here's the thing.
Stanford versus those schedule. Okay, I'm just saying.
It depends on what the rankings come out with tomorrow. If they're sitting 15th, like how the rankings sit Memphis at 15th, right? If they're sitting at 15th, yeah. They're sitting pretty.
I would say that gives them a good spot. Yeah,
that gives them a really good spot. Look, I'm just going to go ahead and kind of pull up some of the schedules of different teams here. Okay, just people immediately in front of him. First of all, Utah is going to have to play Stanford, assuming that they're going to win out the conference. Oklahoma State. There you go. Oklahoma State still has to play TCU, Baylor, and Oklahoma. You think they're out?
Nope, they're done. They're done.
Okay, Iowa still has to play nobody of any importance until the championship game.
I think they're out anyways because they're not beating Ohio State.
They don't play Ohio State until the
title game. If those two meet up until
the title game, they're not playing. They're finishing up their schedule at Indiana, Minnesota, Purdue, at Nebraska. They're not losing. Okay,
Minnesota,
Florida,
maybe.
Florida plays Vanderbilt at South Carolina, FAU, and then Florida State. Guess what? Okay, they could conceivably, and then whatever SEC West team that they're going to play, probably LSU.
Yeah.
Okay, because LSU's still undefeated. I don't think they're going to finish. I don't think they're going to finish undefeated in here.
But
Florida State, who's behind? Okay, Florida. Let's take a look at Clemson's schedule right now. Okay, because Clemson still has to play Florida State this week.
Mm-hmm.
The winner of that, if Florida State wins, Clemson's out. But Florida State's definitely not going to make it into the playoffs.
Here's the thing: if Clemson's sitting with one, this. They lose to Florida State. I still don't see why Memphis would be ranked ahead of them.
It's just going to be a period of staggering down. Okay,
Let me remind you of last year. Marshall was undefeated at 10-0. Didn't get ranked until 2 weeks before the season ended, and they're 24th.
But Marshall is not Memphis. Marshall is not doing what Memphis has done.
No, I get that. Memphis has
an infinitely more difficult schedule than Marshall did last year.
No, I get that, but still, when you're undefeated. And you're sitting at 24th behind teams with three losses that late in the year. That's where I'm coming from. I get it. Sample size is tiny. 1 year makes up basically zero information. But if you go back to BCS, I don't trust them to pick a team as worthy as they might be, as good as Memphis.
This isn't the BCS.
Same people. Bill Hancock's name's on it, so there. That's involvement enough for me. I just don't see that happening because I don't trust the system to give a team that on the field looks to be good enough because of who they're playing. No fault of their own by any means, but I don't see that happening. Why? I don't think this is still people voting. People care about name recognition. And then also,
yes, and Memphis still has games against two more ranked teams, plus a Navy team that's been receiving votes.
The American has no recognition toward the playoff committee. I'm sorry. They don't.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. I'm just talking.
It does. The committee matters. The committee who makes the decisions matter.
The committee matters. Well, the committee is the one who's making the rankings. And I'm telling you right damn now that if Memphis, Houston, and Temple are all ranked in that top 25 for the damn playoffs, that's showing a cognitive sense of what teams are worth and more respect.
Here's the thing. Had Temple beat Notre Dame, I guarantee Temple will be higher than Memphis in the poll.
Oh, possibly, yes.
Just because they beat Notre Dame. Well,
maybe not. No, but you're also going to say that Notre Dame's going to be out of it.
They have two losses. They're
okay.
out of it.
I'm going to go ahead and put Alabama. Okay, Bama plays LSU this week, so one of those teams are going to lose. If Bama loses, they're out. They're not coming back. Okay?
Yeah.
And for Memphis, that'd probably be best if Bama lost. Then they play Mississippi State. Okay, that's two ranked teams. Okay, Charleston Southern, Auburn. That should be no issues, okay? Notre Dame still has games against Pitt, Wake Forest, BC, and then they're finishing up their season versus Stanford. Lost. Okay, Stanford and Notre Dame have both teams. They're right next to each other in that top 25. Something's going to happen. Somebody's got to lose those top 10 teams.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? After that, you got Michigan State, okay? Nebraska, Maryland. Then you play Ohio State. So Michigan State, Ohio State, either one of those teams, and then they play Iowa no matter what's left. Somebody's going to end up with one loss or multiple losses. They're not making it into the playoff. They're going to get kicked out, okay?
I just don't buy it. That's all I'm saying.
TCU ultimately has the tougher schedule than Baylor. TCU plays Oklahoma State this week, Oklahoma, and then Baylor. Baylor, on the other hand, Baylor, on the other hand, plays Oklahoma. Okay, I guess they have the same schedule. They both have their They both have their most difficult schedules left, and there's no way Oklahoma's ranked ahead of Memphis right now, but there's no way Oklahoma's going to stay ranked ahead of Memphis if they sustain another loss. Both these teams, Oklahoma State. If those four teams just keep beating each other up, Memphis keeps on winning, guess what? They're going to move up no matter what. Purely conceivable. You say there's zero chance. I'm saying there's more than zero chance. That's not zero.
Here's the thing. I would love to see some of these teams in the playoff. I just don't see it happening, which is why we need 8-team playoff, obviously. But here, if any of these teams are ranked higher than 15, I'll give them a shot. But if they're 16 or below, no chance. That's my cutoff for week one of the playoff voting. If they're not,
I'll consider that fair.
I would say because that's a lot of ground to make up, and the schedule, yeah, it's pretty good who they're playing. But compared to the rest of conferences, because even though they say they don't take into account the strength of schedule, they probably do in some matter of fashion. But here's one thing, too. We're going to finish up in a minute here. But the playoff committee, the advanced numbers they have are garbage. They consider any team who has a winning record equal. So as a starting point. No. They look at the same thing. Like, okay, you beat teams with but still, I think that's a stupid starting point anyways. Okay, you beat five teams that have a winning record. They could all be 7-5. That means the 12-0 teams equal to 7-5 or 0-12 is equal to 5-7. So that's why I don't like about the either. It's ridiculous numbers they're using, but we'll know more apparently on Tuesday because we're arguing way too much for this. Anything else we should add tonight to cool down?
Nope.
I like Kent Meyer's chrome helmet. That was pretty sweet.
I think this is the biggest amount of hot takes that we've had in this podcast.
It does not go toward the conference. No, it's fair. It's part of our underdog chat, and I'm adamant in there. I'm like, no chance. Talk about Toledo NIU instead. I would prefer that because I'd rather talk about something realistic than this make-believe Memphis.
It's totally realistic.
All right, I think we're done here. We need to finish before we wanted to finish under an hour. And we're getting close to that limit, so we'll wrap it up here. Check out the playoff committee Tuesday night because we'll have hot takes. At least Chris might. I'll be saying I told you so. If not, he'll be yelling at me something to my jerks on Twitter. But Hope you enjoyed the show tonight. We mixed up a little bit. I kind of confessed to Max Smith being a game manager and not terrible. So you got that going for you, Aztec fans, who will still call us a pair of monkeys who know nothing, right?
No.
They said that last week to both of us.
No. They said that to you. I have not heard anything.
No, they said that who's this pair of monkeys with the microphone? Whatever.
Oh, boy.
Hey, we're not. I'm not far off on Maxwell Smith. Next week, if he's 10 for 20, or.
If he's 10 for 20.
I'm back to him being terrible.
If he's 10 for 10, okay.
If he's 10 for 20, something went wrong in that game, right?
If he's 10 for 20, San Diego State actually had to pass to rely on their win.
And then we come back to that saying they need Donald Pumphrey to run as many times as possible, Chase Price, everybody else. So that's our show for tonight. Yeah, Rashard Penny as well. So that's our show tonight. Hot take ended up this evening. Check us out, MWCConnection.com. Again, go to iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and soon to be on Google Music Play Podcast, time frame TBD. So got that going for us. So what do we get, another 10 listeners maybe?
Hopefully.
Yes, that's hopefully 10 more. Great. So, yeah, check us out again, MWCConnection.com. We'll preview week 10 on Wednesday. Week 10. That's kind of sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
But not if your AAC picks you up.
Oh, my God. All right, anyway.
Let's wrap this up. That's our show tonight. Thanks for listening. We'll chat with you guys on Wednesday night to preview week 10. And just Hawaii fans, hope you find your coach and everybody else. Hey, hope your team does well during the next couple days of practice. We'll see you next time. I'm sorry, that was too fun.
Please tell me you're going to get me. You're going to use a clip of me yelling at you as part of a new intro.
We need to, yes, for sure. I mean, I wasn't. I'm not joking around. That's what I feel. So we'll see. All right. Well, I need to hop into bed and get this stuff going for tomorrow. Okay.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. See you, man. Thanks.